Okay, today, welcome everybody. Today we have a brand new member of the church who was just confirmed, Dewey Olson here on the end. And Kevin is with us today, who can only come once in a while because of employment. So welcome everybody to our class today. And today we're starting, today's the 13th day of June in 2021. We have just finished the official book of Moses, of sealed Moses in this book, but there's an addendum that Moses said he really prayed to add. In other words, he says he finished everything the Lord told him to write, but there's something else we're going to read today. And he said, that's so important. Please, can't I put this in too? And the Lord said, okay. And so we get to read this little bonus, and it's called The 12 Apostles of Moses and the Promised Land. It's on 131 if you actually have a hard copy. And it's right after it's sort of part of the sealed book of Moses, and sort of, it's not a chapter. It's at the end, if you're looking at the PDF.
Now, Mormon is the one that asked. I mean, Moroni asked.
No, the Lord. No, Moses asked. See, we read that.
No.
Oh, no, Mormon, verse 28. I, Mormon, being impressed by reading this.
Yeah.
I put in what I was supposed to, and I, Mormon. So it was, I corrected. Thank you. She just corrected me. And Mormon, when he was compiling this, he put in the sealed book of Moses, but he also had this, so thank you, good correction. I, Mormon, was impressed that, can I put this in too? All righty.
Yeah.
Thank you. See, everybody, keep me honest, please. Okay. So with that in mind, I think I will not be one of the ones reading today, but let's start with Kevin, and we'll go around to Jeannie. Yeah, Kevin, if you would start with verse 1, please.
The 12 apostles of Moses and the promised land. And God spoke unto me, Moses, and said, separate a man from each tribe, righteous men and honorable men, and princes of his people, to send me into the land of Canaan. Therefore shall your ambassadors and appointed to keep watch over the land, which I shall give to the children of Israel for an inheritance, and to make a report for the purpose of each of these princes, represent their tribe before all the people. When they report in a general assembly between the nation of Israel and all good things that proceed from this place. For behold, I am giving unto you for an inheritance a land flowing with milk and honey.
Okay, comments, please.
So just how it says that God wanted, he says, when they report in a general assembly between the nation of Israel, all the good things that proceed from this place. So he says, I'm giving you this land flowing with milk and honey. I want you 12 men. Well, he's telling Moses, I want the 12 men to report on the good things. So that's
right. They're supposed to come back and give a pep talk. The Lord has promised to take them to the promised land, right? We always hear of the promised land, and it's going to be a land flowing with milk and honey. That sounds really good. So he's saying, I'm going to want you to choose 12 men to go and have them come back and verify what I've promised, that it's report on the good things. Let's see if they remember their assignment. What other things do you notice in this verse?
Well, another thing too, so when you read this section in the Bible, and it's in Numbers 13 and 14. They call it the spies, the 12 spies, mm-hmm. When it also says that in the last verse. But we learn from this that they're actually the 12 apostles, or the heads of each of the 12 yes. tribes. So they're not just 12 random spies, but they're specific leaders of this organization.
Right. It doesn't say be sure to pick men who are stealthy and can sneak in without being seen. These are men who are righteous, honorable, and princes of the people. Now, it doesn't say they have to be the top leaders of each tribe, but those three requirements. They're righteous, honorable, and princes, and one from each tribe. I don't think the Bible, now I didn't read the Bible on this one today, but Lisa, it didn't say one from each tribe, did it? It just said 12 spies, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. It did, because it goes on to say the same names of each tribe. So it does say one from each tribe.
Okay, so that is, okay, I didn't check that.
I was wondering what it said about, honorable men and princes of his people. Who is his?
Oh, the ambassadors of that tribe. His is, in other words, they're picking a man from a tribe, and he's a prince of that tribe, of his people in that tribe.
And a prince okay. of his people would be God's chosen people.
Well, but this his, it's not talking about God. See?
Well, no, it's talking about, okay, go ahead.
It's talking about the man. In other words, we pick a man who is a prince of his people.
Of each group, yeah.
And so each of the 12 is supposed to be a prince of his tribe.
That's okay.
And I'm,
true, true, yeah, you're
that's
right.
what it's meaning.
It is grouping the tribe.
Okay, so they're going to be sent to the land of Canaan. Ambassador is an interesting word, very different from spy. That implies that they might talk to the people and
promote.
This is a very different concept in an ambassador than spy.
So I think this paragraph overall ties into several of these. And if we have a good understanding of this first one, with the righteous, honorable men, the ambassadors, and the good things, those things we're going to use throughout the rest of the story. When I started to read this, I went back to the last sentence in the verse before, and I just really think there's a bigger picture in this report from everybody when they get back, and that's one thing we need to focus on as we're going through it.
You know, another thing, I've seen several artists' conceptions of this event. And they show two or three men coming back, maybe holding the grapes. We're going to read about the big grapes. But it looks like two or three men and about, 10 men standing around them, like, just not very much. This is, you come back and report to the General Assembly. This is like coming back. Moses is in charge of a million people. This is like a general conference. They're going to be the speakers in general conference to describe the wonderful, beautiful, amazing land that the Lord has given them after they've been slaves in Egypt and wandered around for 40 years. See, it's in Numbers. This is at the end. Oh, I should say that because I'm the calendar guy. In the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the first two, Exodus and Leviticus, are given in the first year after they go into the desert. The Leviticus gives them the law of Moses. They're going to build a tabernacle. It's dedicated. There's a lot there going on. Then it skips 39 years, like in about two verses. And they wandered for 39 years. And then the last two books, is the very last year. And it turns out on the sacred calendars, the first year was holy and the last year is holy. And so there's 39 in between where not much happens. And then it's the last where they have the brazen serpent, the people were bitten by the snakes. They send out the spies. They're close to the promised land. And then Deuteronomy is where the Deutero means second. It's where Moses kind of repeats a lot of things of the history and the law of Moses and gives some new things. That whole book was given by revelation in just a few days. And it's on, it's actually in the last month of the sacred of Moses's life. The whole book of Deuteronomy is given in about a 2-week period. So that's just the, just so you, that was a surprise to me when I did the chronology. I was going to do something in every year. And anyway, so, okay. So I'm telling you that for some reason, this is right at the end of the 40 years, obviously. Okay, anything else before we read verse 2? Yes.
Yeah. I thought the term General Assembly is also interesting because we were singing the song, number 7, and then there's underneath is there Doctrine and Covenants 133, and then in Doctrine and Covenants 133, verse 6, it also says something about General Assembly.
Awesome.
So I think it's important, a General Assembly. I in my 10 years of being a member of LDS, I had one General Assembly, which I can remember, like the last time with the waving of the handkerchiefs. It was the first time in COVID time, I think.
Thank you. Thank you for remembering that that's more than a general conference. I'm going to ask Dewey. He knows about this. I'm going to ask him to comment on General Assembly, please. Loud.
Well, I thought you covered it quite well. But I was grateful one time to go up in the top floor of the Salt Lake Temple. This was when I'd been called on a mission to Perth, Australia. And we had a solemn assembly up in the higher floor. And it was always considered where they would hold their general assemblies, the leaders, to make important decisions. And as you said, and I was... very few times I've got to do the Hosanna shout with the handkerchief, and I say Hosanna 3 times. I'm a little rusty. That's quite a while back. That's back in 1979. But I'm grateful to have done that. You know, these little things is a memory I can still pull up in my head.
But okay, now I'm interested in why you were in that room, because you were going to.
At the time, the mission center, the mission training center was just right close. And then what we would meet in the temple for that meeting on Sunday. It was kind of a special thing. It's not something that would happen now. I mean, that the LDS Church would send you to Provo. It was just one of those experiences I had where it was considered a solemn assembly. It was in the top of the temple where, you know, where a solemn assembly would be if you had access to one, and you were, anyway, then the leaders would often do that. I think sometimes it's when I read this section and think, boy, there must be important somewhere hidden in this. It must have been important to Mormon or Moroni, whoever got this record, got permission and got it in there. There must be some reason in the future where they ask the men to go out and make an honest assessment of the land. I often heard history, a good history is inspired by the Holy Ghost. And so that you can still say, hey, they're mighty and strong and they're giants and it's scary, but with the Lord's power, all things are possible. And the other thing is just you know how leaders are counseling among themselves, but you don't kind of run out in the people and tell them all the gossip and kind of build up little camps outside.
Right.
Anyway, I often think, well, gee, maybe that's the piece that they were trying to make the decision as a group, the leaders, and they kind of spread it out to their friends and family and around, and the camp started picking up sides. Anyway, that's kind of the message I got, the why it might be important in the future.
Very good.
Yeah.
And I'm getting the same thing. They're all saying yes, yes. In other words, we get a book, we read it, say, isn't that interesting about the past? And then something happens in the future. Either we have the General Assembly or we send out 12, spy/ambassadors or apostles. And then we go back and look at this and say, oh my goodness, this just happened again, and this is the map for us. And we better bring a good report. See, you learn from this not to make the same mistakes. We're reading here that they're sent out to bring a good report, and that's not going to happen. And maybe we're supposed to learn. Or in the future, this happens again, and maybe we better remember the assignment.
Well, yeah, I think we are the ambassadors now.
Well, could be. Yeah, absolutely.
We need to build our 12 too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And to focus on the 12 things. Steve, speak to us.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking and listening. And I'm going back to the bottom of 130 there. These people were, Moses was trying to make a Zion-like people out of them. And that didn't work out so well during those years. But Mormon adds there, only understanding this stretch is enough for anyone to understand the power of human feelings and the extent that connects us to the gifts from the name of God.
Oh,
so he's trying to teach us. And here's the story and how that plays out. And it keeps playing out in so many different things.
Yeah.
Thank you. We trigger each other. When I read this morning, it triggered what it's going to say in the next book, in the Acts of the Nephites. There's one verse somewhere in there that says, when you try to have a Zion people and everybody happy and loving and positive, if you have just one person, who goes around really negative and saying, yeah, their leaders are lying to you. I've been there, man, and there's giants, and they're going to kill you. You're being led into a trap. If just one person is the negative killer, he can ruin the whole thing. And it makes the point there that when you have people like that, they can't be part of Zion. They need to actually be expelled because they can ruin, one bad apple can ruin the whole crop. And I found out that's true, by the way.
And
that's one bad apple really does.
I just recently learned, I listened to a Christian radio show, and I've been dealing with people in my life that as a Christian, you even put up with the worst of them, but you still love them. But sometimes it bears too much weight. And the pastor was saying, not outside your flock, but within your flock, if you do have a wolf or if you have someone that has fallen away, you are allowed to judge them. You are allowed to cast them out. And within your own life, if somebody is a burden on you and is not righteous and not Christian, and you are allowed to cast that person out. Of course, love them, pray for them. But you are allowed to get rid of that burden, and we are supposed to. And that is in Scripture.
Absolutely. You don't need to be around the negative vibes and everything so much. But this is what he said. He said it perfectly. You love the person, try to help them. But that doesn't mean you have to be, because we're all influenced by everybody around us.
And real quick, two friends of mine that are in that category have both come back to my property. And each time they have, I asked the Lord to do it for me. And with one guy, within 2 days, three times, the Lord took him away. And the other person right now, he's been in Salt Lake for 3 months because I couldn't handle it. And he took him away. I didn't have to. The Lord did it.
Nice.
Okay. Let's go on first. We're going to go on to the second verse. And let's see. So this man, Dewey, will read that for us, please.
These are their names of the tribe of Reuben. And man, this verse can be tough to pronounce. So forgive me.
Just go for it.
Shalmon, son of Zecher of Simon, Saphat, the son of Horah of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jupanun of Issachar, Algar, the son of Joseph of Ephraim, Hosea, son of Nun of Benjamin, Poltidi, the son of Raphael of Zembulun, Giddi, the son of Soda of Joseph by the tribe of Manasseh, Gedidiah, the son of Susa of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamaliah of Asher, Solar, the son of Michael of Naphtal, Nabuah, the son of Boshas of Gad, and Guru, the son of Mikey.
See, we all
got a good one.
Very good, very good. We always make the new convert have to run
the tough verse.
Yeah, he has to prove he's worthy, and you've made it through.
I slaughtered it, but we love those guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll make one comment because there probably are not lots of comments on this. But I've done a lot of study of the 12 tribes of Israel, and they're listed about five to seven times in the Bible, both Old and New Testament. They are never listed in the same order. One time it's order of birth, one time it's order by whose parents they were, one time it's this, one time it's that. I went through this morning. This is a different order than any order in the Bible. Moses knows what he's doing. He in the Bible, he's listed them in the different orders. I have no idea what this order is, but I'll tell you, I bet it's important. That's comment one. And number two, because it looks really shuffled. He's got them all mixed up. But the number two, it's worth noting which tribe is not here. Manasseh is adopted in as one of the actual tribes. So that makes 13. And when they number the 12, somebody's always left out. In the book of Revelation, the tribe of Dan is left out. And they take turns on who's left out. This time, it's not surprising at all. It's Levi is not there. Joseph and Manasseh, or Ephraim and Manasseh, are both there. Levi is not. And see, Levi does not inherit land. When they divide up the 12 lands in Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh both have land. Levi doesn't have land. He goes around and they're the priests for all of the people. And the priests support them with tithing money. And so that's just a detail for, because I like details.
Well, something in my head is telling me to relate this to the 12 apostles, which obviously is after this. So with the 12 apostles, they all pridefully and egotistically wanted to be number one. And it seems like maybe the shuffling does not give an order and keeps it more general or more neutral.
Yeah, that could be.
Good idea.
That's a really good point. It might actually be shuffled for that reason, because it does start with Reuben, and he was the firstborn, but all the ones after that, if you look, see, they usually have brothers together. At any rate, now let's skip that part.
Yeah, we got to get to the meat.
All right, moving on. See, skip the genealogy, and I write whole articles on that.
Oh, yeah. What I like about this is that you can look up later who is from who is Caleb and from who is Joshua or Hosea.
Right, yeah.
So that's good to know.
Caleb's from Judah, and Joshua is Hosea is his name here. And
yeah,
he's from Benjamin. He's from Ephraim.
Ephraim, yeah.
And okay, so we've done these two. So we're going to Lisa. If you would read verses 3 and 4, please.
Yes. These are the men whom I, Moses, sent to spy out that land, and to Hoshea, the son of Nun, I, Moses, gave the name of Joshua. It came to pass that I, Moses, commanded that every one of them should observe the people that dwell in it, whether they were strong or weak, whether they were few or many, whether their cities were fortified or not, whether the land was fertile or withered, if there were trees and beds of rivers.
Okay, comments, please.
That sounds different from what the Lord was expecting.
Right.
At first, I thought maybe Moses made a mistake. He didn't send them out with the idea of being an emissary or an ambassador. He planted the spy thought into them.
Right. He told them to be spies and to see if there's big people there or how many. So, excellent point.
So do you think Moses messed up their report?
No.
Like, I just wonder.
Well, she's suggesting that he might have, right?
Well, at first, and I read a little later, and I had to think about it, but I don't think Moses did it exactly the way the Lord said, but the Lord has this eternal plan, and kind of knew Moses was going to send him out. So I think the end of the story of the little chapter here has a significant meaning for us that we need to tie into this verse when we get to it.
And it also basically wraps around, like I said, one person to put enough fear into everybody for it to not happen. And we'll get to that, but the Lord knew it and it happened, obviously.
But clearly if they're going all that way, and Moses knows that they're going to go in and take over the land, I wouldn't say this is a mistake, but he might have planted some seeds here that led that grew in the wrong heart. But he is talking spy stuff here now. This is not ambassador stuff. Look around, see where there's strong or weak, few or many. Are the cities fortified?
Bring back fruits and.
Look for rivers. Just like anytime you go out to explore a new land, to build cities, you want rivers. You know, you need stuff for water for the people.
Sort of like questions you ask your realtor when you're going to move.
See, we were just reminded in a blessing that was given today to Brother Olson here. There's sort of two sides of the church or of the Lord's people. There's the spiritual side. We're going to go into the promised land and live and do wonderful spiritual things. And then there's always the civil side. It's just like the two counselors. There's a spiritual counselor and the Aaronic priesthood, the practical, the physical counselor. And he's now emphasizing the physical part. I mean, these are the physical things you need to know. And some people are especially called to work in that area. Well, the two counselors, Brother Woodby and myself, are that way. I'm more in the spiritual side, and he's over the United Order side and the practical and the money and the dispersions. And same idea, two sides. And Moses, I guess I'm saying the Lord talks more about one side and Moses is talking more about the other side, and they're both important. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, should we move on?
Mm-hmm.
All righty, then we're going to Balkia, if you would read, let's see, she read 3 and 4. If you would read probably just 5, that's probably good right there.
Okay, yep, yes. So the 12 went up, and they returned. And when they returned, they brought with them a cluster of grapes, for it was the day of the first fruits, where the grapes came forth. And behold, these grapes were so great that it was necessary 2 men with a staff piercing the bunch to carry them.
Okay.
So. Okay. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Now, the whole time they are referred to as the 12, and they returned and they brought with them. And then suddenly there are the two men who are carrying the grapes.
Right.
And then I was wondering, hey, who would the two men be? I think Caleb and Joshua.
Yeah.
Actually. Good. I think.
Well, I would assume each individual would probably have some servants with them, I assume.
So what?
Servants. So the what?
Oh, so they say you might be servants.
You know.
Oh.
Like each of the 12, because they're princes, because they're important, probably each one would have one or two servants probably to attend with them. Because in my opinion, well, what it seems like in the Bible is 12 princes going out aren't going to go out on their own just because that's not their tradition. They're going to have one or two servants, maybe even more. They're going to have donkeys. They're going to have provisions. It's going to all have to be looked after. So it seemed like it was probably a pretty good crowd that went out with them.
That's an interesting question. It just says 12 men go out, but he brings up a good point that there could be others, and it's just the 12 are emphasized. So that's a possibility. One thing I'm noticing is the importance of evidence and seeing things.
Yeah.
If they just came back and said, you ought to see the grapes, man. It would take two men to carry a bunch. Everybody would say, yeah, sure, right. and so they actually bring them back. And this is so important in everything, in our witnesses of this church, of the sealed book. When you say, no, here it is. I'm not misquoting it. It actually says this. Or you show for people to leave what they already believe, they need to be shown things. And now we live in a day with pictures and movies and videos. And some of our instructions are, well, to make these pamphlets, color pictures. You know, I was so glad with my witness of the plates, I could publish pictures of the plates. Because we can do that now. Anyway, I'm just saying it's so important for people to actually see. And when they cross into the promised land, each of the tribes picks up a stone from the river where they were crossing. See, the story says that the waters stood back and they crossed on, you know, the dry land. But see, they picked up a stone and said, show those to your children and your grandchildren. This stone I picked up from the river bottom on dry land. You know, so I'm just saying the importance of actually seeing things.
Yeah, and I was wondering about the day of the first fruits, because it's a Hebrew.
Yes, that's really
special huge. Day.
There's a festival that's 40 days after what we call Easter. It's always on a Sunday. This is on my chronology. You can see exactly what day this is. And it's a Sunday and it's first fruits. And thank you for asking, or maybe you weren't asking, but I'm going to answer even if you weren't asking. Because
I was wondering what the day of the first fruit is already passed, right? For this year.
Yes, it was the day, first fruits this year was the day on which Tori and Trevor.
Oh yeah, that's true. Okay,
first fruits. It was 7 weeks after Easter, and but a question arose in my research: first fruits of what? Because there's the first fruits of barley. There's the first fruits of wheat.
They're first fruits right now out there in the fields
of the fruit. So, and he's saying right now that people are literally cutting out first fruits. But this makes it clear that day of first fruits was in fact, he's thinking first fruits of grape. And this is the beginning of the vineyard season on the Jubilee calendar. There's the first fruits of wheat for 7 weeks. See, they waved the barley, the first fruits of the grain. That's what Easter Sunday was. They waved the first fruits of the barley harvest, the first fruits from the ground, see? And Jesus was the first fruits of the ground. And that was symbolic of the resurrection. And 7 weeks later on a Sunday is the first fruits of the vine. And it starts 49 days of that. And then on the Jubilee calendar, on that Sunday is the first fruits of the olive oil. And that's when they harvest the olives, all really of the olives. And then they make that into the olive oil, which was used for lamps and heating as well as drinking and cooking. So that was a lot of words to say, first fruits of what? And the answer is, because it gets confused. They'll just say first fruits and people will do the wrong one. But this is clearly first fruits of the grapes. There you go. More than you ever wanted to know, Derek. All righty, we're gonna move on, no harm. We're down to Steve. Maybe read 6 and 7 if you'd like both.
Will do. And at the end of the 40 days since they left, they stood before Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel and began to tell them what they saw and to show them the fruits of the land. And they said unto them, we have gone into the land which thou hast sent us and truly flowed with milk and honey, as the Lord had said. Has somebody already read this, or am I?
No.
Okay. Yeah. We have gone into the land which thou hast sent us and truly flowed with milk and honey, as the Lord said to his servant Moses. See, this is its fruit. Behold, the people marveled at the size and quality of the grapes and were filled with enthusiasm by the account of Caleb and Joshua.
Okay. Comments?
Yes, they were enthusiastic.
Yep, that was their first response because they listened to Caleb and Joshua.
Yeah, but it's also the first word that gets mentioned in the sealed book of Moses, 4:17, with the gifts of God. Then is mentioned enthusiasm is. Oh, yeah, the feelings of charity. And then the first one is enthusiasm.
Right, very good. Very good, thank you.
So we have to be enthusiastic.
But what verse are you quoting?
Oh, yeah, sealed book of Moses, chapter 4, verse 17.
Would you read that for us?
Yeah. What makes you pleasing to my eyes? Because never before I have found in one man the fullness of my name engraved on his heart, just as there is within you the feelings of charity, enthusiasm, peace of the spirit, resignation to withstand adversities, benignity, compassion, faith, tenderness, and self-control, believing that you will attain a higher kingdom with such gifts that are in you, seek to have with you a congregation of those who resemble you.
He was talking about Enoch there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it's good to know the origin of the English word enthusiasm. The thu part, T-H-U, is like theo, which is like deo, like deos. Well, that's Portuguese. It's God. Theology, God. And the N is in. And so the enthusiasm means that God is within you. You have the spirit. You're filled with the spirit of God. And so you want to be filled with the spirit of God, see? And happy for something. And so, I mean, I'm just adding that in to as exactly what you just said. And I had forgotten that verse. Thank you, Falkia. It said that Moses or Enoch already was found having all of the names of God already engraved on his heart. He all these good feelings were already there. Pretty lucky, huh? Okay, obviously he gained them from somewhere. Okay. All right, so we had the good report. Everybody's all fired up. Two apostles had come back and said how great it was. Wow, this has got to have a happy ending, right? Maybe not. Any other comments? Okay. Well, let's see. Then We did Steve. Valera, are you there where you can read verse 8 for us?
I will read it. But the 10 other spies reported to them, saying, "Behold, the people that dwell in the land are mighty, as we have heard of the Nephilim, who were the children of Anak before the flood, and their cities are exceedingly fortified and very great. Beyond these are the Amalekites that dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites that dwell in the mountain, and the Canaanites that dwell by the sea and by the river Jordan."
Okay. Do you want nine? Comments?
Well, this is on the subject, but kind of off the subject. Obviously, a lot of these are the tribes of the giants, multiple different sized giants. But as they explain, they dwell in the caves. And I'm going to make this real fast. So in 2001, we had soldiers in Iraq. They came up to a cave site, and literally a 15-foot giant came out and killed one of the soldiers. Actually killed the whole platoon.
He killed the whole platoon.
But then they sent special forces in. And as one of the special forces was being taken out, they killed the giant by shooting in the head multiple times. And then the military took it to the United States government and had it studied. So they are still here. And over the last 200 years, they're uncovering not only 12 to 50 foot giant skeletons, but I mean, we're talking titans, 50 to 100 foot giants.
Yeah, we don't know. It's between the 12 and 50.
But
yeah. There's a video of that on YouTube. I mean, they've got the huge helicopter. Anyway, you know, there are a few of these guys left around.
It's called.
Steve.
It's called the Giant of Kandahar.
Thank you. I didn't know he had a name.
So and they studied him, right? What are the outcomes of the study?
Nephilim. Double rows of teeth, six toes and fingers. And they had all the military guys coming out. And, you know, of course, they'd been told to keep quiet. But they were all coming out later off the record because they thought everybody needed to know about it. Or several of them did.
When you look at the skeletons let's not go into this. Many skeletons have been found for a long time of big men this tall in the United States. And they're not on display at the Smithsonian Institute. Okay. And so that ruins a lot of theories of people. Yeah.
Darwinism, all that.
That wrecks Darwinism, and so they're not allowed to be known. So you weren't taught that in fourth grade. Well, when you're taught all the other stuff, you know.
I'm just thinking of what they teach fourth
graders. Yeah, okay. So, but one thing I've noticed is Kevin's into this stuff, and he's always talking about the Anunnaki or something.
Yeah, the Anunnaki or the, the Nibiru. But then you also have the Anakins, which is where Anakin Skywalker comes from, because George Lucas used the Bible within Star Wars. So
anyway, it's just a confirmation. This is very fuzzy. What I'm saying is that in the Bible, it just says there were giants in the land, and the word giant is translated from Nephilim, in Hebrew, Nephilim. And it just makes that one comment, and you don't know much about what it is. So we get more detail here. Right, but I'm talking about in Genesis, it talks in the...
It says in Genesis 6, 1 and 2,
giants. So I'm just saying we're getting more detail here, confirming exactly what is meant by giants. And when we get to the story of David and Goliath, Goliath is from Gath, and he's got, or maybe it's his brother that has six...
The Nephilim have six toes and hands, or fingers.
Yeah, it says his brother had six... Suppose that's in the six fingers on his hand. And he's 9 feet, 9 foot nine tall. So if this part of it's in the Bible, but that's also the part a lot of people don't believe. They say, yeah, well, yeah, sure. Got to make the story better, you know, have a 9 foot nine. <Excuse me. clears throat> Okay, so the point is the other spies get up afterwards. It looks like they get the last word. And we're going to go on to verse. Any other comments on verse 8? Go ahead.
I find it interesting that everybody has a special place, the land of the south. And that group is in the mountains, and that is near the water. It always also says something about the groups, I think.
Right. See, if you were faking a book, you wouldn't put in those details, because the Bible talks about all these tribes, but it doesn't say those details of where they are. Two other comments. So these are all Canaanites, meaning they're descendants of Canaan, who is the son of Ham. And was cursed. And it's important to know that this land was not designed for them. All of Ham's children were supposed to be in Africa. And this is the land of Shem, which is all of Asia, basically. And the land of Japheth is all of Europe, the three sons of Noah. These are people who didn't want to be in Egypt. And, you know, from Egypt, you just cross, you can just go up into Israel, Jordan, Palestine. So they took over this land. So they were usurping, squatting on the land of the other tribes. So that's why the Lord is taking, he's going to give it back to Israel, is one comment. And they name all of these tribes in the Bible as all children of Canaan. That's why they're called Canaanites. These are like those are the names of Canaan's children and grandchildren, some of them. Okay, another comment. It says that they knew that there were giants before the flood. And it says that they were, it's somewhere it said here before the flood.
The very beginning.
Yeah, the children of Anak, see who were, We've heard of the Nephilim, who were the children of Anak before the flood. And it makes it sound like they survived the flood.
They did. Some did.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure.
Or they were brought back.
Yes.
Which the Lord can do.
The Lord's very clear that at the flood, everybody was killed except the ones on the boat. And so it's very easy to start these guys up again for where they came from in the first place. So I will just suggest that they're not actually survived the flood.
Well,
they came again.
One rumor is the three wives that were taken for Noah's three sons, which were part of the destruction of the race of mankind. They took that, and supposedly they had the Y chromosome, which was the Nephilim chromosome. So possibly some of Noah's sons' children mixed with the fallen race of man through the wives possibly had an evolution of giants. Possibly.
But that, I'm just going to add, that is all possibly in speculation. But when you look at the record in the book of Jasher, which I believe is a true record on things like genealogy, it's not prophecy, but it does genealogies pretty well. It says that all three of the wives of the three sons of Noah were all the three daughters of a certain man. And that the Lord was doing everything he could to start afresh with new people.
Oh, okay.
Perfectly. He's cleaning up all of the Nephilim. He's cleaning up all of that junk. He's not sneaking in a chromosome. Everything was supposed to be cleaned up and start afresh. But it can be reintroduced from the same place it came.
Sure. Well, you need good and evil. That's the whole
You need good
part
and evil, but
world.
The Lord's working on the good.
Yeah, and of course. And then, of course, Lucifer comes in. He influences Ham, right?
So I'm saying I'm saying that's important because I'm going to add this. Because in the book of Abraham, it talks about that Ham marries somebody named Egyptus. And when you go back, that was changed from how Joseph Smith had it. The Brigham Young is the one that brought in the doctrine that the blacks should not have the priesthood and the curse of Cain and all of these things. And that name was not Egyptus in the original. It was Zeptah, Zeptah. And that was changed. So I'm just saying, I actually, on that point, I think I'm believing more of the book of Jasher, because I think the book of Abraham's inspired a revelation of Joseph Smith. It's not what was on the papyrus. He had a revelation, but that's been tampered with. So that's why we're working so hard to study these things, to find out what's actually true. Okay, have we beat that one to death?
Yeah.
Or I can maybe.
I want to read none.
Okay, I think it's your turn. Valera just read eight, so you go, Jeannie.
Okay. I'm going to read verse 9, and as I'm doing that, I'm going to also make a comment on verse 8. And please remember, again, the purpose. We're trying to find the overall purpose of why Mormon wanted this story in so much, and it has to do with, you know, that last sentence, the extent that connects us to the gifts from the name of God. So we need to remember those gifts. And so in verse 8, we missed a point where it says that they talked about all the children from before the flood, blah, 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 fortified and very, very great. The next word says, beyond these are the, and then it names everybody. So to me, it sounds like you had to pass by this scary part to get to what the good stuff was going to come, because beyond that, then they don't give you bad report. So in verse 9, it comes to pass that Caleb steps in. So now think about these guys. They all went out. They all had to pass through the area where the scary part to even begin to know where all these other guys were in the south and the river and
it's a good point,
all those sections. So I think that's really important. By the time they come back, they had to pass them again. So they've got two times of somehow they made it through, and now they're standing there saying, oh, this is bad, we're not going to make it. And Caleb stands up and says, it came to pass that Caleb shut up the people, saying, let us go up quickly and take this land for an inheritance, because we will surely prevail against it and get the best that exists in all the regions around us. So I read that and I was like, why, is he the greedy one? All of a sudden it sounds like, let's go back and just get the best for ourselves. Yeah, a little fear. I want to be there first, so to speak. But all of a sudden, he is saying it's doable. So
yeah, there's really enthusiasm.
Because we will surely prevail against it. If we end it right there, that'd be perfect. But remembering what that sentence was before the story, this, I think, is an example of man interjecting their thoughts that we'll get the best.
No, and,
but the story, this is the whole point of the story, is how God is saying this and how, what is man doing with it?
I'm going to just do a little slightly different flavor on that. To me, this is Caleb filled with enthusiasm, and he's not being greedy at all. He's bringing the attention back. I love what you said about, it's like you have the big dragons, the keepers of the gate, and you have to go by the big bad guys, and then they get to the good part. I didn't even pick up on that. Thank you. And then when everybody came back, they came back through the bad guys again. Maybe that's why they're spies. That's where they had to be stealthy, was to get and not be killed by the giants. So they get back. So all they seem to remember is the bad stuff. Like, there's giants there. I don't think we're even going to make it. And so Caleb is bringing it back to, he wants the last word, and to shut them up, those actual words are said, and say, let's go quickly. Forget all of that. Let's go quickly. Take the land and get the best. He's drawing their attention back to the big grapes.
Okay.
Let's go get these grapes that God's given them to us. And he's taking them back. I like the last sentence where, look at all the good stuff there and forget the, yeah, there's some giants, whatever, you know, but let's go for it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, funny. Totally. And they would have won. They
yeah.
would have won.
Of course,
the Lord is on their side. Yeah. But of course, you had the one or two or three skeptics that another 40 years in the wilderness.
The 10 skeptics.
Oh, the 10. Wow.
Yeah, 12 went. Only two were good.
We're wanting to. See, that's
all
the that's all the tests. That's what we're going through from Cain and Abel, Adam and Eve, all the way till now.
Funny thing.
And real quick, I want to mention this. When I talk to people and try to wake them up and tell them what's going on, they always say, well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I'm like, no. Drop the word hope. Even though it's in the Bible, there's a purpose for it, but it leaves a percentage of doubt. Replace it with faith. And it will happen. It will come true. Because, yes, I have faith it will happen. Because the Lord's doing it. Come on, people. You know? There's a lot of people that just don't have faith. They have hope. And that's not enough.
We're already past our time. So let's stop on verse 9. So we've seen the good report, and then the bad, and then an attempt to leave it with the good. And tune in next week. And we will find out what happens if people were more impressed with the good or the bad reports, and how this cliffhanger turns out.
Yeah, because verse 10 gives us a lot of insight.
Right, and then it leads into what's done. Coming. So it's a good time to, I think that's a good time to stop.
I'm going to stop the recording.
We're going to stop the recording. We might have a little more.